Hey, good morning, everyone. Julie, just a quick check with you. Have we got everybody who is in the waiting room now in our public session?
I believe so, except Dan Dustin just popped in, so he's in the process of joining.
Okay, so let's just wait just about 10 seconds here. Okay, I think we've got everyone who is in the waiting room now connected. Julie, just let us know if that is not the case. Good morning, everyone. This is Nancy Ann Oliver, Chair of the Board of Accountancy, and we are now resuming in public session. This is Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. This meeting is being held in person and via Zoom. Please be sure to mute your mic through Zoom or mute your phone if participating by phone. If you wish to speak, please unmute. Please do not use the chat room for any discussions. Should there be any technical difficulties, such as right now, the meeting will be paused until it is resolved. Okay, hold on just a minute. Are you able to hit and start video?
Yeah, it went blank and now it's not coming back.
It's frozen.
Oh. It says your camera's been occupied by other applications.
It costs us $1 million to get our stuff back.
It happens. Now, when you teach, are you teaching this kind of stuff?
How to deal with computers? No, I'm not teaching that. And so far, I haven't had any of these major technical difficulties in teaching, so.
Your camera's been occupied by other apps. Occupied by other apps, please release permissions or something like that.
You don't have permission to do if you're on.
Yeah, I don't. I don't.
Kid mode, so.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Please save us.
Is that you or is that?
That's Tracy. IT. Sorry.
Every time you see that little symbol up there, that's them promoting it.
That's it.
That's it.
DASIT.
Yeah. It's my keys.
Are we still recording the other one?
I think we're still recording. Well, it's proof that we have technical difficulties. Okay. We didn't prolong this meeting just because we weren't at it yet.
Waiting for lunch. We did a lot of phone work, but you couldn't meet. The problem you have is they've sent you documents, but are they looking at the same one you're looking at? Does it say page 3 at the bottom? Well, mine says page 6. We'll find page 3.
Right. So, there you go.
It's so much easier if you can just hold it up. Is that what you're saying?
Okay.
Yeah.
Look in there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the last to make sure activities. I'm
keeping my dog on my screen.
They have a public session.
Whatever policy.
Yeah, but all the non, not that they're not relevant, but the lesser relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. Although we have a line that was a similar kind of thing.
Okay, so people on the Zoom, we're going to have to leave the meeting real quick, and then we're going to restart the meeting. So if you can just give us a quick...
I don't know. That's picking you up.
Oh.
We all can stay there. Just the conference room will leave the meeting.
Leave the...
Okay.
You got it?
Okay. Am I rejoining or am I just waiting?
You're supposed to be working to read this and
I'm
trying to line up my columns, and
you have to just...
I've
got Dan Dustin here.
I got a hammer.
I got so mad.
Yeah.
So it's going to
have
his voice pick up, because he has a big crash.
Yep.
There were some words, because then one of my answers, I was just near done. I don't know what happened, but it completely wiped up.
Oh, my God.
Yes, join button.
Yep.
Even MS is not the best
environment. Yeah, you're working with a Model A. It's going to
eventually
be better.
There we go.
Something.
Can you see us?
I can see you.
Oh,
can you?
Yeah, there we go.
We cannot see you.
We're trying to get a video. Hold on.
I click on video and it doesn't.
The start video won't start.
It doesn't even give us options, like the arrow, the up arrow is not even there.
Yeah, okay. Well, Julie, so I can see your picture. You can hear us okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, what I'd like to do is
keep an eye out on attendees.
Okay, great. And please let me know if somebody has raised their hand. Joel, if you can change our view to be the tile.
Yeah.
Please, yeah, the gallery view. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and are we still recording or did we turn that off?
No, I left it on.
Okay, so we're still recording. I want to just go around the room here so that everybody knows who's in the public session now. Again, this is Nancy Young Oliver, board chair.
Deanna Franco, public member.
Jason Robinson, treasurer.
Joel Parks, board staff.
Kimberly Fast, Executive Director.
Stuart Morris, Board Member.
Roel Valdivia, Board Member.
And online, Joe.
Joe Sullivan, Board Vice Chair.
Kaylee.
Kaylee Lyons, Board Member.
Angie.
Angie Hunt, Board Legal Counsel.
Anthony.
Anthony Chong, Board Staff.
Jeremiah.
Maya Leppert, Board Staff.
Julie?
Julie Nadeau, Board Staff.
Tanya?
Tanya Moffitt, we'll go out of chair.
Okay, if you can scroll to the next page. Okay, Mr. Wilson?
Ryan Wilson, Director of School of Accounting, University of Oregon.
Great. Ray Johnson? No, yeah. You're on mute. You're on mute, Ray.
Thank you. Sorry, Ray Johnson, former member of the Board of Accountancy at Oregon, Professor Emeritus, Portland State University.
Great. And thank you for joining us, Ray. It's good to see you. Elizabeth?
Good to see you.
Elizabeth Ballmer, faculty, Portland State University.
Colleen?
There, Colleen Conrad, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy.
Great. Amanda?
Amanda Fells, Rep from OAIA.
Tracy Allen?
Tracy Allen, representing the Oregon Society of CPAs as the Vice Chair.
Dan Dustin?
And Dustin, Vice President, State Board Relations with NASBA.
Logan Steele? So I can't see a face there, but sir, if you're with us, you're on mute. We want to give you the opportunity to just introduce yourselves for the record. Okay, we'll keep going and come back to Mr. Steele. Sherry McPherson?
Good morning. I'm Sherry McPherson, Oregon Society CPA. Online, you'll see both Sherry McPherson and a 503-799-3736 phone number. That's me. Okay. I apologize. I have a family emergency. I may have to step away from our meeting today.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sherry. I'll go to the next page. Okay, so I think that I have addressed everyone who is with us remotely. If I fail to acknowledge you, please raise your hand or speak up. Okay.
Can we note that Nicholas Bird is still on the call but is not in front of the video?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Julie. All right, back to our public board meeting agenda. Item number 3 is for public comment. And I believe that, can you scroll back over to page 2, please, Tony? Mr. Wilson, I believe that you wanted to provide public comment, so we'll start with you, sir, if you'd like to go ahead.
Wonderful, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to speak. And to be with the board, I'm really grateful. So I'd like to read just a very brief, maybe 2-3 minute statement here in support of accounting and data analytics taught in an accounting context being considered as an upper division core accounting course. And my comments are not just in reference to the suite of courses that we offer here at the University of Oregon, but really my comments are intended to apply to all of our peer schools who offer or plan to offer similar courses of this nature. So just kind of put that in context. So with that said, let me jump right into the specifics. I'll try to keep this pretty brief. So as adopted in October of 2020, the Uniform Accountancy Act model rules recommend that courses pertaining to data analytics be approved for both core accounting and accounting-related content requirements. Our department and faculty at the University of Oregon have reviewed the model rule requirements for education that was approved by the NASBA Board of Directors in October. Rule 5.2, the education requirements determining compliance of the applicant's education, Section D, Part 2, states that an applicant will have satisfied the educational requirements if they have earned a minimum of 12 semester credit hours in some or all the following subject matter content areas listed in Rule 5.2D, number 2, 5 through 17. So within that list, they then include item number 15, which is data analytics, data interrogation techniques, and/or digital acumen in an accounting context, whether taken in a business school or another college or university program, such as engineering or computer science. It's noted further down that general data and analytics courses qualify in the other than accounting bucket. So what I want to emphasize is that item 15, data analytics in an accounting, taught in an accounting context, which is the way that we teach our suite of classes here, is unlike the core accounting requirement. All other analytics courses would not qualify as accounting education requirements. Our conclusion from reading this is that it is not important whether the class is taught under the business school course number, but rather what is important is that the subject matter focuses on those skills within the accounting context. Right, so that's important. In addition, the latest CPA exam blueprint indicates that data and analytics is going to be tested in both the audit and the EC sections of the exam. The new exam becomes effective in July, as most of you probably know. We expect future revisions of the exam to even more heavily weight data and analytics. From the perspective of our faculty at Oregon and the people at the firms that hire our students, we believe the AICPA and NASBA are trying their best to ensure that tomorrow's accountants are well prepared for the existing rigor of the profession. Given the complexities of most companies' financial system environments and the fact that all but the very smallest organizations process thousands, if not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of journal entries every year, the only way testing can be performed on these companies is through the use of data and analytics. So our students currently under the present rules are very constrained in their selection of upper division accounting courses. They're trying to respond to the demand that they're hearing from the firms that are hiring them that they be exposed to accounting and data analytics. But they're having to drop this course very, very quickly. We've seen our enrollment decline because it isn't considered to be an upper division for accounting course. And the problem is we're placing an undue financial burden on our students by not following the guidance that's been provided by NASBA and AICPA. And this burden is falling disproportionately on students who have financial need and who can least afford to take extra classes that don't meet the upper division core requirements. So for this reason, we would love to have this matter resolved prior to the beginning of classes in the fall so that we can direct our students back into those courses that are demanded by the firms that are hiring students so that they can get exposure to accounting data and analytics. So that's all I have to say. Thank you for your time and consideration. I'm sorry I read that rather than just speaking off the cuff, but I didn't want to get off message. I wanted to make sure I hit all the points. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Kimberly, do you have a copy of his written statement here?
No. Ryan, would you mind emailing me the statement you just read to my email address, please?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. I think it largely echoes the letter that I wrote to you in February.
Thank you so much.
And just so everyone knows, we've lost our video here again in the Board of Accountancy conference room, so I apologize for that. So I want to make sure that we've heard from anybody who wants to make a public comment. You know, Ray, you joined us today, and Elizabeth Ulmer, you joined us today. I just want to pause for a minute to see if there's any comments from either or both of you.
Yes, I'd like to speak for a few minutes if I might.
Yes.
I want to follow on the conversation that Ryan just had. I want to speak both from my experience as a member of the Education Committee at NASBA and a former chair of the International Accounting Education Standards Board Consultant Advisory Group. In those capacities, we've been working very hard to bring data analytics into the mainstream, because that's something that we're clearly hearing from the accounting profession, not just in the U.S., but globally. I want to really make three points. My first point is classification matters in terms of how you count accounting data analytics. And the viewpoint of NASBA, what you see in the new NASBA model rule, is that data analytics taught in accounting context should be counted as a core accounting course. Students in the accounting and other business-related areas tend to have more than enough credit hours to fill that bucket. But they're often constrained in terms of what they use to count for the 24 semester hours and 36 quarter hours of upper division accounting. So I would encourage you to, my second point is, I'd encourage you to adopt the NASBA model rules that were adopted, that were presented in November of last year, that are now part of the UAA model rules, that would put accounting data analytics in that accounting bucket. My third point that I'd like, the sooner, I understand the rulemaking is going to take some time, but as soon as possible, if possibly today, the board could give faculty and students a feel for what direction you want to go. It really matters, because it's going to affect scheduling of classes, it's going to affect enrollment of students. So the sooner we, the faculty, know what direction you're going to go, it really does affect what courses will be offered during the next academic year. So thank you very much for listening. I'd be happy to answer any questions at any point. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ray. Elizabeth, I didn't know if you wanted to provide a comment.
Thank you for the opportunity, Nancy. I think that my colleagues have really explained the main points that I was hoping could be conveyed today, so I don't have anything else to add.
Okay. Mr. Steele, have you joined us?
Yes, President, thank you.
Great. I just wanted to open up. Did you have anything that you wanted to add on this matter or any other matter?
Yes, much like Elizabeth, I echo Ryan's commentary. Agree wholeheartedly. This is very important to our students. We have required data analyst courses in accounting and elective ones, so it's a vital point for us to clarify that.
And Mr. Steele, I'm sorry, but we missed you in the roll call earlier. Could you just help us understand what entity you're representing today?
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. So I'm representing Oregon State University. I'm the accounting program director and associate school head.
Great, thank you very much. I'm looking at all the names on the screen, and I'm not sure who else might want to provide some public comment.
Tracy Allen?
Sure. This is my first board meeting, so I'll jump in. I know that from the Oregon Society of CPAs, we also concur that we would love to see the NASBA rules adopted and be able to keep the profession strong, to keep students coming into the profession and draw them in, and also believe that data analytics is an important piece of that as a feature of accounting and support and what firms are needing and what accounting is needing from employers.
Thank you, Tracy. So I want to pause, and Julie, maybe you can help me if you can tell me if anybody has their hand up. We don't have any video at all, so I'm not sure if someone wants to provide some additional comment.
I don't see any hands up. Amanda, are you interested in providing public comment or just in your section on the agenda? Amanda's stuck on mute there.
Just in my section on the agenda, thank you.
Thank you. And Sherry?
I believe she had to step away from it.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's all I can see. I think you reached everybody else.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you very much. And we appreciate the comments. I'd like to move on to our next agenda item, which is an informational item. It's the Complaints Committee, a summary from BOAC.
The meeting that we had several, just a handful of investigations that were pushed forward to us, to the board, and as well as several complaints that were up for either closure or open, and we pushed several over for our consideration for closure.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Will at this time? Okay, we do have some new business. Julie, can you tell me, are friends, everyone from NASBA here? I think I saw Colleen in the room, but we were going to have a discussion on remote testing of a pilot project.
Yes, Colleen and Dan are both here.
Great. Can we turn it over to them now?
Sure. So, hi, everybody, and thank you for inviting us to attend this meeting. I am going to speak to the topic of remote testing the CPA exam, and then I believe Dan has a separate topic related to education, maybe education rules. I'll go ahead and go first. First of all, this has been something we've been working on for over a year now. Probably, if you've been on your board for a while, I don't know what was in your materials, but you might have received a white paper from NASBA in January, on January 21st, that was like almost 40 pages of details and information and frequently asked questions regarding this project. We also sent a letter to your chair and your executive director on February 9th with a specific request, and that is partly why I am here before you today. So we'll circle back to that here in a couple minutes. But when the pandemic started, Prometric had to shut down its test centers in the United States and Canada, and ended up being for a month and a half, mid-March until May 1st, everywhere. And then they started coming online in many states. Certain states on the seaboard, they weren't able to open quite that quickly. And when they came on board, it was only for essential profession services, of which the accounting profession was deemed essential, so they could start testing CPAs in. But they had to have social distancing in their test centers, and so they had to cancel appointments for some and defer appointments. And so there was, one, a lot of upheaval for the period of March and probably through June for most places. And because of that, we realized, NASPA and AICPA, working with Prometric, we realized that we didn't have a contingency solution if test centers had to close. And if candidates, were not able to test, it was a disruption in testing. And so what we decided to do with, like many other licensure organizations and others that give examinations, started looking at the options that are out there. And remote testing or remote proctoring of examinations is one of those options. So since we are already in a contract with Prometric, and candidates go to Prometric test centers now to take the exam, we've looked at their tool, which is called ProProctor, which is a solution that, bottom line, allows candidates to test at home using their own equipment, test in their office, test somewhere outside of a Prometric test center with their computer locked down, and to be able to take an examination. Now, I will say, when I first heard of this concept, I thought this is a bad idea. I don't know how you can make it secure enough. But I will say I've learned a lot over the past year about how it works and all of the mitigation and compensating controls and what they do to ensure the security of the examination and to make sure it's a fair examination. We are still working on it. Our request to you is that we want to do a pilot of the CPA examination given remotely in a few states for a small number of candidates taking the exam. And the request is that the state boards accept the scores from those candidates who would be testing remotely for licensure in your state. Now, I know that Kimberly provided me some information from your state board rules, and we'll talk about those here in a minute. But that is really the question. Some states, if it's the uniform CPA examination, and AICPA, who writes the examination and scores the examinations, has a team of psychometricians on staff, have a committee of a psychometric oversight committee, have the board of examiners, which oversees everything. They assert to us that this is the, no matter whether the examination is given in a Prometric test center or whether it would be given remotely, it is the same examination. It is the uniform CPA examination. Now, I will tell you that if I sat down to take the audit section of the examination and my associate Dan Dustin sat next to me taking that same audit section, we would have different questions. It would be in different orders, but they equate. There's multiple panels of every examination out in the system at any point in time, but they all test the same content and skills based on the blueprint that AICP puts out and tells everybody what's going to be tested. So AICPA says this examination is the same. So we believe that state boards should accept the scores, but some states have the ability to say they don't. Now, Oregon is one of the last boards that I'm talking to. We've been having conversations with boards since January. And I have, at this point, we have 50 states who have said, yes, they will accept scores. I'm expecting, I met with another state, I met with Michigan a week ago, and I'm expecting a letter from them saying they're going to accept scores. Vermont and Maine are umbrella agency boards, and they don't meet often, but we fully anticipate they're going to accept scores. And so then my last states are Oregon and Colorado, who I have not yet met with. And they have asked for some additional information, which I'm going to provide them. So no states have said they will not accept scores at this point. So I just want to make sure that I share that information with you too. So what we've been doing is parallel paths. One is working on the technology to make sure that AICPA can, through their test driver, push the examination to the ProProctor system. So working on the technology to make sure it works. At the same time, kicking the tires on the ProProctor system, making sure they've had penetration tests and static code reviews, other technology reviews, so we ensure that even before we would pilot, that we believe that it is a solid, secure system. And so during the tests that we've asked them to do, some things have come up, as often do in penetration tests, and this is a system that they are constantly improving. They're spending lots of time. It's a system, the tool has been out there for 3 years now. Some other licensing bodies, like the accountancy boards, have already shifted to, and they allow candidates to choose whether they want to test in a test center or test remotely. One of those is the Architects. The NCARB and the Architect boards started using ProProctor last December. So they're constantly evolving the system, which was lightly used, and now a number of testing organizations have shifted to it or added it. But as we required that they do penetration tests and stuff, some things needed to be mitigated. And so we have been waiting for them. As you also know, with technology, things take time, even though they're working on it quickly, to get things fixed and mitigated. And then we've said, not just fix it, but have the same outside consultants that actually did the work come back and retest it again. So we're kind of still in that phase, because as they fix things, other things have come up. So we're still in the phase of them getting it to a point that we're going to say, yes, we're comfortable doing a pilot. So that work is ongoing. At the same time, we've been communicating out to the state boards. I know some of you have probably joined us for webcasts. We started talking about this a year ago at our regional meetings and let the boards know that we were starting to look at it. We had a series of webcasts in the fall and winter, one in October, one in December, one in January, where we shared a lot of information, did a demo of the system, etc. You should have also received an invitation to a webcast we're going to have next week on the 10th. And if you haven't, if you missed the email, need us to resend it or whatever, don't hesitate. It's for state board members and staff. It's a closed meeting. We're going to share and update them and share more information now that we're past busy season and such. So we wanted to check back in with the boards and let you know how things are going. At this point, the pilot, the earliest it will be later in the summer as we are working through these issues, but which gave us the latitude of additional time to continue talking to the boards and answering questions and getting information and giving in. So what is the pilot? The pilot will be 250 to 1,000 sections given, and this is across the four sections of the examination. So So it's not a lot when you know that we can give upwards of 40,000 sections a quarter. So that gives you the order of magnitude of it's 250 to 1,000 sections. We have already selected the pilot states, so it would not be Oregon candidates at this point, because Oregon was not one of the, you know, knowing that we were having a conversation late with you, some of those that talked to us early and said we would love to be part of the pilot, those are the states where the candidates will be candidates of those states. It's volunteer only, so they choose whether they want to participate or not. It will only be domestic candidates. We're trying to keep this simple. We're taking the international candidate population out of the equation because it brings some added issues and complexities. It will not be candidates who need testing accommodations because there are things that still need to, that are still being worked on to adequately handle some of the number of accommodations can already be handled, but we just thought let's just keep it simple because the test centers are open and the candidates can go there. So that's what it'll be. And then what we're going to do is we're not coming to the boards and saying, will you let us start testing the CPA exam remotely on a go-forward basis? That's not our request. Our request is just we want to do a pilot, and we just don't want candidates in harm's way. We don't want a candidate taking part in the pilot and then having a state say, we're not going to accept the score because you took the exam remotely. What is remote testing, very briefly, just to give you the flavor, is that candidate systems, they will be using their own equipment. So their systems have to meet minimum requirements for the examination to be able to be given on a certain size monitor. They have to have a freestanding camera. Just certain things about their operating system. If they're using a work computer, is probably a bad idea because they have to be able to get through firewalls and be able to load software. And many companies lock down computers, that sort of thing. They can't use a VPN. So they can check their system to make sure that it meets the minimum requirements. Then the day of the exam, they're going to get on, they're going to check their equipment again. They need to make sure that their environment meets the requirements, that it has to be what we call a sanitized environment. Where I'm sitting with is not good, because at a minimum I would have to tack a sheet up behind me, so it's very obvious that it's clear. My desk has to be clear. I can't have drinks. I can't have my phone. I can't, it has to be like it would be in a test center. No paper. And then I'm going to get on with a readiness agent. So from that point on, I will be observed the entire time and through when I finish my test. Okay, so this is a situation where they are live watched the entire time that they're testing. The only time they're not is if they take a scheduled break and they get up, go to the restroom, whatever. They are off screen, but they have to come back then and be checked in again. So we'll talk about that briefly. So this readiness agent is going to do that. They're going to, before they would have started, they're going to have to have taken their driver's license or whatever and taken a picture of it. They're going to have to take their own picture and load those up. The readiness agent is going to check that against what's in the system for them. They're going to ensure that their system meets the minimum requirements. They're going to go through a check-in like they would in a test center. So if I had glasses on, I'm going to have to show them my glasses up close. I shouldn't have on jewelry except a wedding ring or whatever, and then I have to show that. I have to stand up. I have to turn my pockets inside out. I have to show them my arms that I don't have writing. Just the kinds of things they would do in a test center. They're going to check out my environment. So I'm going to have to take that camera and go all around the room, show underneath, show everywhere so they are comfortable that the environment is sanitized and clean. So then they're going to turn me over to a proctor.
at that point, the proctor, whose job I would not want, is sits there and watches people take examinations. Now, they can watch up to 8 people. So if you look at your screen and how many, you know, like, there's quite a few here. Say that there are 8 boxes, and that's who they watch take examinations. And if somebody looks like they're doing something suspicious or they're concerned, they can kind of maximize that person and look at them closer. So I'll take Dan Dustin, my associate there, and say he's looking shifty, he keeps looking to the right, he's talking, he's doing something he shouldn't do, or he got him out of the room. I can maximize and look at him closer while I still have the other boxes and can see the other people testing. And if I'm concerned enough, I can then say, I'm going to turn him over to a security proctor. So then a security proctor takes on Dan Dustin, and they're only looking at him. So it's a one-on-one at that point. And they have the ability to go back. Like if I made a note about 2 minutes and 30 seconds in, something flagged, they can rewind the video and go back and look and listen. They can talk to him, just like I could as a proctor, too. But they can say, Dan, I need you to take your camera and show around the room again. I need you to do this. Dan has to do that. If there is evidence of cheating that meets our requirements, then they have the ability to stop this test right there. If they say, well, no, they think that everything's okay, we always save the video so we can go back and use it and look at it later. But they could send it back to the proctor, let him finish his examination, and go on. So that kind of just could give you a flavor for how it works. That's how it works. His computer is locked down. The only thing that can be utilized on, he can't get to the internet, he can't get to other software, he can only use the ProProctor tool that was sent out to his computer, which then locked everything else down. That gives you a little bit of a sense of that. So why we were doing this, one, contingency solution, but I also kind of want to hit on a couple other things. And I know it feels like today, now maybe Oregon, you've had some flare-ups, you've had some other things going on there that maybe make it a little more real to you, but now that we're getting into vaccine, we're saying, well, maybe we don't want this anymore. And, you know, we may end up landing them, but we've come this far. We're saying, let's go ahead and get this pilot down so we can test it before we might ever need it. And even if we decide to then not go forward with anything in the short term, this is the future of testing. I really believe that we're, you know, as people say, the pandemic has meant a very quick evolution of a lot of technology and of changing the way we're doing things. And this is definitely true in the testing world, the high-stakes testing world. So we know the big companies like Prometric is one of the blue chip of the testing companies, one of the top 2 or 3 in the world that test internationally, spending a lot of time and effort and money on these systems because this is now what everybody wants. So at some point, we may need to pivot to this, and this is a step along the way to allow us to figure it out as we go. I will also say pipeline considerations. We know that candidates have been significantly disrupted through the pandemic, right? They couldn't test for a while. Then do they want to test? You know, they have to go in with masks and social distancing. State boards, we recommended state boards extend notices to schedule and extend credits, and we appreciated that the boards did that. Most are back now to a normalcy. Most state boards extended those credits and notices to schedule through the end of December, which we appreciated. Some have extended a little further. On credits, many are doing it case by case. Like if somebody, international candidates, can't get to a test center, or if somebody has COVID in a family medical situation with some extension, so most states are case to case now. But we know that by giving the extensions, candidates naturally procrastinate. You give a candidate more time, just like everybody in life, right? You give them more time, they're going to put off taking that test.
And we know that's not always to their advantage, because the further a student, a candidate gets away from their education, the lower their pass rate is on the examination. So they're better off testing while they're in study mode, while they're in school mode and testing mode, before they start working, and then they get busy with work. They, you know, life gets in the way in many ways, getting married, having kids. And you don't want candidates to drop out, because we already have some challenges with pipelines, where we have fewer kids going into accounting, fewer taking the examination, and it's really a public interest mandate to keep CPAs in the pipeline to replace those that are starting to age out and retire even more quickly now than they were for a while. Secondly, uncontrollable factors. What happened during the heat of the pandemic last May, June timeframe, we had a state with an executive order from the governor saying that if you cannot give your licensure exams, go ahead and license people and let them go back and take it. So that's not a good solution for public protection. And we also had on the Eastern Seaboard some states that if you're an essential profession, let people go ahead and provide the services without licenses. And that's not a good answer either, because then those who are not licensed could do audits and can do other work, and they can't be effectively regulated. So those are other things that made us think, let's go ahead and get this ship shaped so we have it if we need it. We may not need it, but let's go ahead and get it through pilot. So then we come back to the boards and then say, okay, here's the good, the bad, and the ugly from the pilot. And now let's have a conversation about what you want to do next. Just use it for contingency purposes, or do we just want to shelve it for now and have it ready for you? So, sorry to talk so long, but I wanted to try and convey as much as I could in a short amount of time. If you have questions, I'd invite those. Briefly, Kimberly, as I said, sent me an email with your rules in your state. And there are references to testing at examination test centers for Oregon. Now remember, Oregon would not be a pilot state, but just could you accept scores if somebody had scores from another state would be our question to you. But I will say that as I try to describe this, remote testing will be its own test center, technically. It will have a test center code, it will be a test center, and so, you know, depending on how your attorneys would want to read laws, read your rules and consider it, it will be like it's remote will be a test center of its own, and you would know if somebody tested remotely if you looked up the code for the test.
So Colleen,
thank you.
Colleen, thank you for that. So I do want to open it up for some questions, and then once we go through those questions, we're going to have to reboot our system again. Just sorry for the technical difficulties, but it's I don't know why it's happening. One of the questions that I have is, are we talking about remote testing as a regular process, or are we talking about remote testing in a sense, an emergency situation or in unusual circumstances, or are you looking to move this to be just the norm?
So right now, we want the board's opinion, board's collectively opinion on this. What we feel like we have heard is we're not ready for prime time. We're not ready. The best place for candidates to test is test centers. Physical test centers, they are most controllable. So we have been approaching this in the spirit of once we got past the pilot and the pilot goes well and we can come back to the boards and say we think it is valid and workable, that it would then be for emergency use only when test centers are closed. But obviously, really want the state boards to ultimately weigh in. I can tell you now that I have some state boards, Hawaii, maybe in Alaska,
where some of the more remote, the states with candidates that are very, very remote and have to spend a lot of money to get somewhere, and it's very inconvenient to get to a test center. I've had some say we would use it now. We really want uniformity, so we want to, we really prefer to say all states now, contingency, emergency use only. Then the question is, how do you define emergency? And that would be our next step, if that's where the boards want to go with it, which would be after we get through the pilot, which is not emergency use, it's a controlled environment. By the way, what I didn't say, it would be like 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, the pilot. So it's very targeted number of candidates, period of time we're doing it. But it would be emergency use as, and we would come back to the boards, say, here's a definition of emergency. Boards, how do you feel about this definition? And expose that to you.
Okay, thank you. I want to open it to the other board members for further questions. So Colleen right now.
Colleen, this is Jason Robinson. So you said you had 1,000 sections that were being tested. How many participants? I missed that.
It doesn't really matter. It could be, it's 250 to 1,000 sections. Candidates could not retake a section in this 3 week period because the period that we would choose, scores would not be released to allow that to happen. So you could have a candidate who says during that 3 weeks, I want to take audit and bar, one early, one late. They could schedule two. So we think most candidates would not want to do sections within a 3 week period.
So
we think it probably be 250 to 1,000 candidates, but they're not precluded from trying to take several sections.
Okay. So you're going to be in close contact with those candidates, right?
Absolutely. What we would do would, when we say yes, we're ready now to move forward with the pilot, we would be sending communications to the candidates in the pilot states, describing the opportunity, sharing information, and then they would have multiple communications after that, where they would learn, what are the system requirements, how the process will work. Kind of white glove them through it. Because what happens if they get in and there's a system issue? We want to make sure that, and we've talked to ProMetric about it, it's important that that candidates be able to pivot. We need to be able to reschedule them into a test center quickly because they've studied, they're ready to test. If there's an issue with them through the pilot, we want to get them to a test center so they can test.
So these are all potential CPAs only. These are actual candidates that are going in there to test to get their CPA license.
Yes, live candidates taking the live examination.
And how many of those candidates are you going to set up to test the system to see if they can actually cheat?
So, even before we would get to the pilot, and I'm glad you brought this up, there is already testing going on behind the scenes. There's end-to-end testing to make sure all the systems work, but there will also be testing of people related to AICPA and NASBA. We're going to do a little bit of friends and family, some people that have been around the examination, asking maybe a few executive directors and some board members to also take it, and so there will be some attempts at cheating there to test how it works. Do know that already ProProctor is in use by a number of examinations. So we already know, we're always in touch with ProMetric to say, give us examples already of how people would try to cheat. It's a high stakes examination and people know they have to sign an informed consent. If they cheat, that's problematic and they could be throwing away all of their education because they then may not be able to come back and take the CPA examination. So it's
an area of much interest. What are the protections against cheating? Because we do know, and I don't know if there's any, well, I know there's some educators that have at least stayed on and to listen, but some of the people that first, that will say this is a bad idea are educators, because they see students cheating. During this pandemic, a lot of candidates or, you know, a lot of students are getting their education remotely. This is high-stakes testing, which is a little different than what a lot of the systems that universities use, when they cost more. You've got live people watching them the whole time. The way it's locked down, the way the systems work are very secure.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from board members? Joe or Haley was online. Did you guys have any questions of Colleen?
No.
Okay. So we do have one more presentation from Dan Dustin that we want to consider here before we go back and address the analytics question. But we need to reboot. So I think, Julie, everybody else stays online except for the conference room. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Hang with us, everyone. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and try and reboot this.
There's lunches in the, if you guys want to grab your.
All right, so we're in the conference room. We now have video to see you, but I'm understanding that you still don't see us. And I'm not understanding what the technical difficulties are. However, with that stated, we now have Dan Dustin, NASPA Vice President of the State Board of Relations with us. Is that correct?
Yes, good afternoon.
Great. Hi, Dan. So,
hi,
I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm understanding you're going to talk to us about the educational requirements.
Yes. What I'll do is I'll give you a little background, too. I want to touch upon the CPL Evolution Initiative, because that's really what started, really a focus on the education rules and resulted in the changes that Dr. Wilson spoke of a short time ago. So one of the things certainly we did about 3.5 years ago was really recognize almost a perfect storm. In one case, we had certainly technology impacting really our lives overall, but certainly the way the profession is being practiced today. And one of the things that we do when we share information about the CPA Evolution Initiative is point to the fact that based on the AACPA's accounting trends reports, firm hiring patterns have resulted in 29% less accounting program graduates being hired by CPA firms from 2014 to 2018. In addition, in the past year, we've done some surveys across the country with respect to folks who are participating in accounting programs, and 51% of the accounting programs that responded indicated that they're having a decrease in the number of students that are participating in their programs. So you, on one hand, you have the profession, and you have clients who are requesting more technology being provided to them, and that firms take advantage of technology in the services they perform, and at the same time having fewer accounting graduates being hired. And the firms aren't reporting that they're hiring fewer people. It's just that they are augmenting their hires by hiring folks who have technology backgrounds and other backgrounds. So, you know, in some ways, that laid the foundation for what we're doing with CPA Evolution. Talk about the rule changes, and as Dr. Wilson pointed about a short time ago, what we did historically in the 2008 version of the rules, which was the last time they were modified, they basically were a list of 8 or 10 different areas. And I will stress that it's content, not coursework, in the UA model rules. In content, if you focus on content, provides the academic community greater flexibility in what they teach, because they're not focused just on a course and what they can do in a course, but it's the content that's required. When we look at what was being asked of many jurisdictions in their rules, we found that there were accounting cores, and certainly you have an accounting core, and the rules in Oregon are slightly different than the model rules, and that happens a lot. But we tried to move the model rules more into alignment with where boards of accountancy were, because even though you may go to school in Oregon, unfortunately, you may graduate and take a job in California or in Washington. So portability is very important in recognizing the fact that students didn't necessarily stay in the jurisdiction where they are educated. With respect to the model rules, we went back and in some ways were confusing because it talked about having to have 24 hours excluding principals or excluding introductory accounting coursework. And what we did was we tried to clarify with the new version of the rules that were adopted last October by saying that you needed, in addition to principal's introduction, additional coursework. And in some ways, that aligns with what you have right now, where you have your accounting core. The one thing, though, that we did was we tried to align the model rules with where we envisioned CTA evolution taking the academy exam. The exam, as we envision it, beginning in January of 2024, is going to be a core, and that core is going to consist of essentially financial accounting, audit and taxation, and then three disciplines. And those disciplines will be information systems and control, certain core technology, business analysis and reporting, which is where you're going to find some data analytics, and tax and financial planning. So three areas plus the core. But we also recognize if you had the ability to see, and I apologize, I can't share it with you today, but if you had a picture of a model, you would see that technology is embedded, recognized as being embedded throughout the core and throughout those three disciplines. So I think, you know, really that's important to consider. The other thing, I think that's important, and you know, at some point I'd be happy to come back and give you an update on CTA evolution. We're going to be doing one at our regional meeting later this month. I invite all the board members to participate in that. It's going to be virtual, and we're going to cover CTA evolution in great detail there. But one of the things that we did was a gap analysis, and in some ways I think it speaks to your discussion here today. We surveyed accounting department chairs across the country on eight different areas of technology and found that there are some areas that are not being taught very much at all right now, whether you're a small, medium, or large accounting program. We define that as 50 or fewer students, 50 to 100, or over 100 students when we look at those definitions. The important thing I wanted to point out, though, that was, while many schools reported not covering a lot of technology at this point, one area where they are reporting that there is coverage is data analytics. 64% of the programs on the other side combined said they're covering data analytics right now. So I wanted to share that. The other thing I did want to share, certainly, looking at your rules 801-010-0050, shows you at your core, you define your core. And in some ways, that aligns with where the model rules are today in subsection 2, where we modified those rules to include a lot of, really the recognition of a lot of technology, including data analytics, that if you were to look at it, the way those rules are structured today, includes, you know, certainly a requirement of accounting information systems, because again, technology is going to be part of the exam. It's certainly a part of practice today, but then we also included things like data analysis, data interrogation techniques, digital acumen. And I'll tell you, when we threw digital acumen in there, you know, we had a lot of questions, what is that? But at the end of the day, we're hearing in firm surveys we're seeing right now that digital acumen, knowing how to use technology and how to respond to client needs and recognizing how technology can assist clients in their needs is something that a lot of firms right now, at least the top 100 firms, are focusing on as being very important to graduates. So I wanted to give you that kind of background, talk to you a little bit about how the rules were modified, extended. Certainly, I'll open it up to questions if you have any, and give you some more flavor of what's going on right now, both with Seek Evolution and really the data we're collecting, both from the academic community and from the firms as we continue through the implementation phase of Seek Evolution. The one other thing I would encourage you to do, and I know your meeting's today, and you're going to be talking about this today, but on June 15th and 16th, there's going to be a model, a CP Evolution model curriculum launch event being hosted by AAA. We can certainly give you that information. We've been sharing it with the academic community. We've done email blasts to all the boards of accountancy members and executive directors, encouraging them to participate. And it's essentially 2.5 days. Talk about really the background, talk about what's going on in academia, and really what the needs are. It's an opportunity for us to launch the model, the CP Evolution model curriculum, and what we think the topics and learning objectives need to be as we move forward as a profession with technology. And you'll see that there is data analytics coursework being included in that model curriculum. So, and right now, my understanding, this morning I was on a call, we have close to 1,900 people registered for that launch event in a couple of weeks. So if you need information about that, we can certainly share that. We'll probably be sharing another email blast with everybody in the next week or so. But with that, let me open up any questions you may have.
Great, thank you, Dan. And yes, if you could send that contact information on that to Kelly so she can get it out to all of the board members here, I'd really appreciate that. I definitely think that there's more information to understand on this. And the evolution, you know, the CP evolution, you know, it's been a kind of a long time in the works. And I know that a lot of effort and a lot of time has gone into it by a lot of different members. And so it's kind of an exciting turn of the page as we go forward in that. And we'd love to have you come visit us. So, you know, we'll leave that up to you to coordinate with Kimberly. But we do like to see you here in person. And as the world is opening up, we'd certainly welcome, you know, that opportunity to have you, you know, face-to-face and here with the board members. With that aside, I just want to see if any of our board members have any specific questions of you. Amy, Joe, okay, and looking around the room. Okay, no. We don't have any additional questions at this time, Dan, but thank you for speaking with us today, and look forward to further conversations so that we can bring, you know, everything in line to be consistent, you know, from one state to the next. It's really hard sometimes to look at all of this and figure out how to bring everybody in alignment together. And I think that there's always some challenges with that, but we are certainly open and committed to doing our part to see that. So, I just want to check to see if Dan, you or Colleen have any kind of final parting comments.
I just want to thank you all for having us today. I know you've had some technical difficulties. I certainly look forward to meeting with you soon, and I'll reach out to Kimberly to try to schedule something on that. And certainly, you know, I think we both appreciate the fact that you're talking with the academic community, considering the changes that are occurring in the profession, and that's very positive, so thank you.
Great, and I really don't have anything further to add. We just appreciate the opportunity to be here, and if you have more questions, need more information, anything we can do for you, that would be fantastic. What we're here for.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And I was sharing earlier with our board members that in the class that I'm teaching right now at Portland State, we have that opportunity to do the proctoring, right, with our students who are, you know, just working from home, and they're proctoring a midterm or a final exam, and how that works. And You know, certainly we've come a long way in the technology, and it, just personally, it helps to have had that real life experience with the proctoring tools that PSU at least has made available. Now, that's only one university, and I get it's a limited view, but it does help me better understand the parameters around, you know, how it can be remote proctored successfully, and the elements that go into that. And you know, with everything, you know, whether they're with you in class or whether they're doing it remotely, cheaters are gonna cheat. There's no way around it. It doesn't make a difference whether it's online or in your class. But it does help having that experience to see how it works real time in the classroom setting, and how that opportunity to do it remotely affects students, and in this case, you know, CPA candidates. So we are looking forward to more information on that. And Colleen, are you looking for something in writing from the Oregon Board of Accountancy on that, you know, whether we would accept the proctoring that's occurring in the pilot piece?
It would be best, and I will say some boards will send a letter just saying we will accept scores, whatever parameters you want to put around it, but others just send the executive director an email saying that this is what the board supports, you know, decided to, that if they do accept scores from the pilot, and we'll report more information.
Okay, so just something in writing, just somehow via email or a formal communication letter. Great. Okay, thank you. And you're welcome to stay with us through the rest of the day, but I also understand that your time is pulled in many different directions, and so if you need to drop off of this call, we totally understand. But thank you so much for both of you being here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Did we need to restart the camera?
Are
no,
we
restart the camera.
We're good.
Yeah, we just don't get, they don't get to see us right now.
Whenever we go, whenever we take a break for lunch, he's going to do like a big reboot.
Yeah, I guess we can do that. Let me just look at our agenda here. Before we do that, I want to go ahead and finish the items on number 5. If we could address item 5C, the diversity, equity, and inclusion statement. Kim, I asked you that right when you stuffed your mouthful of a sandwich. I apologize.
This is a draft that was created to post on our website just to have our stance on diversity, equity, and inclusion as a policy statement for our agency. If it looks good for you, we'll go ahead and post it. If you have any edits or comments, happy to address those as well.
I didn't have any further comments. Haley?
Who drafted this? Where did the language come from? How did we come up with the verbiage for it?
I drafted it. This is Kim. And it was kind of taken little bits and pieces from several different areas, searches, other state agencies, Oregon agencies, schools, a bunch of different resources that kind of came into play.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Is this, so I don't have any suggested changes. Is this something that we have to vote on?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Unless Andy disagrees, but I...
Yeah. You would need to vote on it if you're going to adopt it as a policy. Or as there's something that the board wants to put out there. It's like actually a decision to go on.
It's just a statement. It's not a policy.
Okay.
We're covered with the policy of those types of things for state employees. This is just sort of the statement of our agency's stance on the equity and inclusion, all that stuff.
Okay.
So the point of the voting is that so that the, all of the board weighs in and then everyone knows everyone's position on it. So if there was somebody who didn't agree, that was progressed in the vote. So if I do think you should vote on it, but you guys can do what you want.
All right, so do I hear a motion to adopt this statement?
I put forward a motion to adopt the diversity and equity statement as presented.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is passed.
Thank you.
Okay, the Oregon candidate stats 2021 Q1.
These are just for your information. They're also included in the newsletter that we send out quarterly. The next thing is the top 10 exam candidate list. It also goes to the OSCPA, and they, if and when we have another banquet, they'll be recognized for these scores.
Okay. And then the last item there, you have the 2021 board member roster.
Yes, so this is an updated roster, including Haley and getting Stu back in the groove because we had a misstep over there. And so that's just for your information.
Okay.
And just FYI, a new roster was emailed to you this morning because we have Haley's email incorrect, so that's been changed.
Okay, thank you very much. So now that we've had Colleen's presentation and Dan's presentation, we've heard some public comments. I want to go back to what Ray had stated in his, is that, you know, there's consideration for, you know, what classes are everyone, is everyone going to provide in this next fall, and is analytics going to be part of it, yes or no? And the challenge, so I've been, as we've been breaking, meeting a little bit with board staff to understand, you know, what's our challenge here? What's the hurdle that we're trying to get over? And I'm understanding that part of our challenge in just giving a blanket acceptance to analytics is that the board roles have to account for curriculum from institutions across the country, including foreign education, not just the Oregon bucket. And while we get to have more communication with the Oregon schools, we don't necessarily get to have that say or that input or that consideration for other institutions. And I've asked for some more information from for board staff to get me from NASBA regarding their development of the model curriculum that I'm understanding is like in development or in the process of being, you know, like finalized. So that I want to see some more information there. The board feels that, you know, it's a valid topic, and the question is should it be considered like business law, which is a part of the CPA exam, and a big part of the CPA exam, but business law in and of itself is not counted as a core curriculum, but it's counted in that other bucket. And so looking at if we're going to accept analytics as a core course towards the, you know, the credits that are needed, then what does that have to look like? And like I said at the beginning, the challenge is that it's not just the Oregon schools that get affected by our decisions, but those external. So how do we say to Oregon, yes, you know, we'll take this one class, but classes coming from another state are not going to be accepted. So I want to acknowledge that Ray asked for a decision by the board, you know, as quickly as possible, and I want to be able to commit to doing that. I've asked for some additional information from NASBA, and I know that board staff is going to get that to me, I'm going to assume as quickly as possible, so that we can look at this and get an answer back to the Oregon universities, you know, looking at, you know, I know you want to set your schedule if it's not already been set up for the fall. So the commitment is to look at this in detail as quickly as we can and get something back to the universities in a formal communication. So I just, Ray, I see your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, I appreciate that. And you know, I just encourage you to take a strong look at the UAA model rule. I think the UAA model rule, the NASPA Education Committee, the AICPA, and NASPA jointly spent a lot of time trying to think about how to write these rules in a way that could be adopted uniformly across all jurisdictions, which is what the UAA model rules have been about. And so as you deliberate, I really encourage you to take a hard look at that model rule because, you know, it's been vetted in a number of ways, including allowing state boards to have input when it was in exposure draft form. So, you know, I'd encourage you taking a hard look at the model rule and thinking about, can you adopt the model rule in Oregon?
Yeah, thank you, Ray. I've got notes on that from when you were speaking on that earlier. I'm just looking around to see who's in the conference room. Elizabeth, you're still with us. I don't know if you have anything else final to say on the matter, or Logan, or I think there was one other person.
I would just add, following on what Ray said, you know, this is very similar to any sort of new course that's adopted. These go through not just our own internal review processes. When we set up a course, that's for example, you know, an accounting course, it needs to get approval all the way through the university. If the course doesn't have accounting content, say if we're trying to teach a marketing course, the marketing department's going to stop that course from being approved. We also have external accrediting bodies that review at a very detailed level the syllabus of all of our classes. So for these to be approved as accounting courses, there's already been internal vetting, and I understand that the board needs to look at them as well, but just to add to understanding how does it course to that point. So these courses have been under development, they've been going through review processes on an ongoing basis. I believe Oregon State's course very recently went through an accreditation review. So just adding that to the background. And so there should be a way for you to, just like any other course, to access the syllabus, understand that it's accounting. And it seems from an outsider's perspective that really if there's an acceptance of accounting analytics courses, then really it would just be the one-off course that might be taught out by another department when an accounting department doesn't have the faculty to prerequisite skills. And the UAA rules, model rules do address that point, that it doesn't have to be accounting. So from a logistical perspective, with thinking about what needs to be vetted, I'm just hopeful that that's helpful to your staff.
Yeah, it is, Elizabeth. And I, you know, I appreciate the comments that you made about getting the courses you know, approved through the accrediting. Having gone through that process with PSU myself when we did the forensic investigative accounting class, quite frankly, that was like a lot of work to get that done and to get it through. I thought you guys were never going to leave me alone with all those questions to get it into the cycle. And that was a tremendous amount of work. And I think if I remember right, it took 2 years before we got the okay from all the parties involved, and that was not just meeting on a periodic basis, but we were meeting on a regular basis and being hit from more sides than I had ever imagined would be needed in that particular situation. So I know it's a very robust process firsthand, but I appreciate those comments being added. Mr. Steele, was there anything else that you wanted to add?
Oh, sorry, I was away, so I don't know what I'd be adding to necessarily.
Just say yes.
Yes, I'll add in one thing. And this would relate back to the analytics issue. Is the lead time it takes at universities to make any kind of changes, just as a general kind of point, You know, if I were to try to change a course name for next spring, actually it's already too late. So we just have a really long process, a lot of committees, a lot of bureaucracy to work through. That's just something I ask you all, you know, as a point of information to keep in mind.
Okay. And Mr. Wilson, did you want to have any final closing comment before we move on?
No, I'm just grateful that you're going to consider this and make a decision quickly. I would echo what Ray said. I really appreciate your consideration of this and having us all here today.
Great. All right. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate your time and being with us today. We are going to take a short break for an official lunch, which is really code for we're going to reboot once again, and then we're going to go into our regular board meeting session items on cases heard in executive session. All right, we'll be back. I'm going to say, cross my fingers, I'm going to say 10 minutes. We'll see how we do.
Yeah.
That's the official break for lunch.
10 minutes.
People. Dessert.
We're still in public session. And okay, so we are now on agenda item number 7 regarding cases heard in executive session. Are there motions? So,
Nancy, you don't have Joe back yet, so
oh, okay.
I don't know who.
Okay, and do we have Haley?
Yeah.
Oh, there's Haley. Okay, top right hand corner. Okay. While we're waiting for Joe, who's going to make the motions and who's going to second it? Do you make the motions, Jason?
Sure.
Okay, let's wait for a second while we're waiting for Joe to come back.
You want to practice a little?
It's technically only been 8 minutes, so he may be counting on that full 10 minutes.
I would.
Julie, I love that you stated the obvious. I know you were doing that math in your head. You know we always do. We're
chewing
over
food. We're
talking
about first and seconds, that's all. Okay. Joe's back with us, and we've got Haley. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to hearing motions on cases that have been heard in executive session. And just remember, we first went by case number, not
name. Okay. In case number 20-012, we find our... I make a motion of sufficient evidence for violation of ORS 673.320 Pren 3, use of a term certified public accountant, CPA, by holding out as a CPA while in lapse status.
I'll second the motion.
Is there any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, motion is passed.
I make a motion in same case 20-012 for sufficient evidence of a violation of OAR 801-030-0010 Pren 1, Pren B, due professional care by not timely responding timely to trust beneficiaries.
I'll second the motion.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay. And just for the record, I am viewing online that Haley and Joe have both indicated aye by a show of hand or a nod. Okay. All right. Moving on.
And I make a motion in case number 20-013 for sufficient evidence in violation of OAR 801-030-0010, Pren 1, Pren C, planning and supervision, and or OAR 801-030-0020, Pren 4, acting through others.
I'll second the motion.
Can I just clarify, did you say sufficient or insufficient?
Sufficient.
Good.
Oh, sorry. Insufficient.
Okay. So just to clarify, in case number 20-013, the motion is for
insufficient
evidence in planning and supervision for allowing a non-active CPA to provide services in the name of the firm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Is there a second?
I will resecond it.
Okay, there is a second. Is there any further discussion on this case? Okay, hearing none. Those in favor for insufficient evidence, please state aye.
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 Okay, I've got Joe and Haley show of hands there. Are those opposed? Motion has passed.
So... and I make a motion for case 20-031 for sufficient evidence for a violation of ORS 673.320 Pren 3, use of the term CPA for holding out as a CPA.
Okay, so
I'll second it.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to open it up to discussion. In this matter, we have four cases that are all related that are going to be considered for a violation on four different cases on four different matters. And so I want to see if maybe what we want to do is make a motion for all four of those cases listed in each one of these matters instead of having to go through this.
Individually?
Yeah. So would you like to reconsider?
I will make a new motion. I would like to make a motion for cases 20-031 through 20-034 for sufficient evidence in violation of ORS 673.320 Pren 3, use of the term CPA for holding out as a CPA, ORS 673.320 Pren 4, use of the term CPA for holding out as a firm as a CPA firm, OAR 801-030-0020 Pren 10, notification of a change of address, and OAR 801-030-0020 Pren 8, board communications and investigations for not responding.
I'll second that.
Okay, so further discussion in this matter? OK, Okay, hearing none. For a vote of sufficient evidence of a violation in cases 20-031, 20-032, 20-033, and 20-034, state aye.
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 Okay, and noted by vote by hand on Haley and Joe. Those opposed? Motion has passed.
Ready? And I make a motion for case 21-001 for sufficient evidence in violation of ORS 673.160 Pren 1, registration of a business organizations, and or OAR 801-010-0345 Pren 1, registration of a business organizations, by holding firm out to clients in this state, and sufficient evidence for OAR 801-010-0080 Pren 2 Pren E application by reciprocity by practicing as a CPA in Oregon without obtaining an Oregon CPA license.
I'll second it.
Further discussion? Hearing none, for a vote of sufficient evidence in case 21-001, state aye.
Aye.
Joe and Haley have both indicated aye by raising the hand. Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion has passed. Just Haley and Joe, just so you know, we have again lost our video, so I'll just need you to unmute so we can hear your vote on this next matters. Okay, the next section is
settlements.
Settlements. So consideration of settlement proposals. Item number 8A.
So are we going to handle the reporting inquiries and rate general inquiries?
Oh yeah, we can. Yes, sorry. So moving on to, back to your ring sheet. So those items for closing the inquiry with no further actions. Is there a motion?
There is a motion for closing inquiries 2019-RPT-018, 2019-RPT-059, and 2020-RPT-013.
I'll second.
Is there any further discussion on this? These three cases to close with no further action.
For just to say you a little awkward on the next one, you could just say, is there a motion to close the request for direction inquiry proposal as provided on the agenda? And that way you don't have to go through and read every single one.
Thank you,
okay.
Angie.
We'll do that. Okay. For a vote of yes to close the inquiries with no further action, state aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion has passed.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that that somebody else made the motion. I can't make a motion. There was that.
We're going to make a motion for G right now.
Okay, great.
For G. I make a motion to close the request for direction inquiries as stated in section 4G.
I second that.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. To close the inquiries as listed in 4G, state aye.
Aye.
Joe and Haley.
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Those opposed? Motion has passed. Great, thank you. Hopefully we still have audio, we have no visual. That's fine, let's just keep going. Consideration of settlement proposals.
Settlement reached for investigation 19-004, Kelly Koski. The issues were holding out, registration, improper firm names, and injury and more investigations. The terms that agreed to were $50,000 in penalties, $7,500 in costs. With stay on $25,000 in penalties and the $7,500 in costs for a net amount due of $25,000.
Is there a motion?
I make a motion to adopt the settlement as proposed.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor of accepting the settlement proposal in case 19-004, state aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is passed. Case number 20-001.
This investigation involved due professional care and auditing standards. Triples agreed to are 24 hours of CPE, including 8 hours in auto documentation and updates, 8 hours in SARS engagements, and 8 hours related to PCAOE engagements. Also, $5,000 in penalties, $1,000 in costs, staying $2,000 in penalty, and $1,000 in costs, for a net due of $3,000.
I make a motion to adopt the settlement for case 20-001 as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none. For a vote of accepting the settlement proposal in the matter of case number 20-001, state aye.
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 Okay. Those opposed? Motion is carried. Case number 20-003.
This case was on Richard Larson and Novum Grading Company. It had to do with performing municipal audits without an appropriate licensure. The settlement agreement assesses $15,000 in civil penalties and $2,000 in costs. $5,000 of the civil penalties and $2,000 in costs were stayed for a net due of $10,000.
I make a motion to adopt the settlement as proposed for case number 20-003.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? For a vote to accept the settlement proposal in regards to case number 20-003, state aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is carried. Okay. Item number 9 on our agenda is review of the public board summary from February 11th and April 4th. I believe this is just an informational item. So unless there's any comment or suggested changes. Okay, moving on. Item 10, report of the OSCPA. So I know that Sherry had to drop off, but I believe that somebody else was there to...
Tracy?
Yes, hi. Sherry's had to pop off, but I'm Tracy Allen, Vice Chair of the OSCPA, incoming Vice Chair, I should say. So thank you for having me. First, I appreciate that. It's my first Oregon Board of Accountancy meeting, so thanks for having me. And I'll be the new liaison starting April, technically April 1st is when I took office. Our report, I'll try to keep it fairly brief. The Circle of Excellence Awards that we usually do in May every year that recognizes new candidates, new CPAs, scholarships, obviously was canceled due to COVID. We are putting together, the society's putting together an online celebratory visual that'll come out in the next few weeks. And we definitely look forward to next year being able to use that, hopefully again in person, and as well as with the board, be able to congratulate those new candidates. So we are working on towards in-person next year if possible. For CPE, we're still online as well. We've got quite a robust offering as we get close to the June 30 here, with people, our CPAs taking, you know, catalog or online web programs through the OSCPA that are some Oregon specific, as well as national partners that are assisting us there. And we've had quite a bit of success being able to keep CPE in front of the CPAs that need it for renewal, and just being able to offer, I think, a wide variety of programs. So that's been good. Also, the OSCPA Educational Foundation has met since the last board meeting, and they awarded 44 scholarships totaling $116,000 to students. And over the time, I think since maybe 80s, somewhere in there, 80s, late 80s, they've awarded about $2.5 million of the scholarships overall. So we're very pleased to be able to report that. And then we also have our annual professional updates issue, professional issues update coming in December that we normally do. At this time, we're still planning to host that online, unless something changes. Hopefully, we'll be able to do some live as well as online, but at this point, it's still looking to be online until we know a little bit more. So that's our report, and thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today, Tracy, and welcome. We look forward to further communications with you. And hopefully, we'll be able to do all this, you know, in person here coming up. Hopefully, not too much longer, because these technical, oopas are killing me.
That's been a good day, so I appreciate
it. Like the most of us here, this is like the worst.
I know, so it's the worst one ever that we've had. So our apologies on that, but welcome, Tracy. We look forward to meeting with you in person. All right, item number 11, report of the OAIA.
Hello, my name is the OAIA, first vice president. And here at OAIA, you know, our focus really is on CPE, our upcoming CPE classes. So we have we are currently maintaining our online seminars through the end of summer. However, we are beginning to transition back to in person seminars starting this fall. So that is our plan under current guidance. So obviously, we're all watching to see how that goes, but right now, that's kind of what we're planning for. So we hope that that will be a success. Here between now and kind of the middle of June, we do have several upcoming CPE classes that cover ethics, accounting fundamentals, tax planning, and updates. So we hope people would take a look at our schedule and participate in those classes if they can. So that is what we're at.
Great. Thank you, Amanda.
You're welcome.
Item number 12, report of the chair. That would be me. Right. Well, I have nothing to report. Do I have anything to report? I don't think I do.
Well, we had a budget hearing.
Oh yeah, we did. We had a budget hearing. Life is good on our budget. It looks like that's going to go through. You know, it's an interesting process when you're putting forth a budget when we are being self-supporting, and then you have to worry about other people thinking that they have the rights to take away your funds and redirect those when, you know, we are a self-supporting board.
Yes.
So that went smoothly. Kim did a great job, filled in questions, you know, without missing a beat. So, you know, I knock on wood, but I think that we're looking pretty good at this point.
So we did. We are. It went through Ways and Means. They voted aye. You know, well, yes. And then it went to full Ways and Means, and they gave us all yeses except for one no for Gerard. Somebody always has a little yeah. He was our no. Now it's going to the floor for official vote. I don't know when that's scheduled yet, but we're good now.
Okay.
And we haven't been robbed of any funds at this point.
Well, we were, and then
we've not got been swept.
Right. They tried, and then they changed their mind.
Yeah. They threatened, but we have not been swept.
I think they got a windfall of money all of a sudden.
Kimberly, we're pretty steady, aren't we? I mean, as far as
well,
is there an increase or decrease in our budget?
I'll let our treasurer explain that.
Yeah, well, that's our next report. Well, actually,
the vice chair.
We need to come back to the vice chair, but let's go ahead and answer this question, and then we'll go back to Joe.
So, for the current budget, we have a decrease in sales, everything, but we've had savings because of our executive director in personal services and services and supplies to more than make up for the decline. So, overall, our budgetary for this biennial period is looking really good. Mm-hmm. So,
just so everyone knows, what we presented to them was that our expenditures were going to be a little bit more than the inflow in this next year. However, we had stated that we had anticipated that, and that's why we had, you know, a fund balance that we could tap into to make sure that we were able to meet all of our obligations. So, but, you know, I think most everybody followed what we were getting at. You know, again, the bottom line is that we are self-supporting through, you know, the fees, you know, licensing fees and all the fees that we charge. We're not asking for an appropriation from the state's general fund coffers. So, that's always good. When you have to hold your hand up and ask for funding from the state out of the general fund, and then that's where I think they start really digging in and saying, okay, you guys aren't doing it right. You should be self-supporting.
Yeah.
So we are self-supporting and we'll continue to do that. I want to circle back to the vice chair, turn it over to Joe.
Good news, I have no report.
Kim, is that true? Does he have no report? Because she has to keep me in line. I just figure and assume that she has to keep me in line.
I don't think he has anything right now.
Okay.
That is real. You keep going.
Okay, thank you. All right, next item. And Jason, was that everything from the treasurer's report, or did you have anything else? Okay, thank you. Right, item 15, report of the executive director.
So earlier we had to cross off a few of the write-offs that we had thought we were going to present today. I've been working closely with Angie. Angie's been working closely with another DOJ attorney. We've been talking to all kinds of people about our write-off certification and our accounts receivable policy. The ones that are still okay. So Carol Bopp, John Coggle, Benjamin Hall, and Larry Henderson Jr. Each of these cases. So let's see. Benjamin Hall owes us $202.80, and his case was back in like 2003, so it's very, very old. And we sent a letter to him on May 7th, 2018 as a collection notice, which we're required to do for accounts receivables. He didn't respond, so now we have the ability to write this off. And when we say write off, it doesn't mean that it can never be collectible. It's just off of our books. Same with Larry Henderson. He has an uncollectible debt of $21,861.87. He too was sent a letter on May 31st, 2018, which he did not respond to. John Coggle, he has John Coggle has $213.63. That was an older case as well. We sent him a letter May 4th, 2018. He did not respond. And then Carol Bopp. Some of you may remember if you've been around long enough. Her case was from 2012, and her uncollectible debt so far is $26,213.54. She was notified of her collection amount on May 31st, 2018.
Would you like to vote on the adopting the policy?
Okay, so we need two votes, one to adopt the policy and then the other one to do the write-offs?
Right, so the policy we actually kind of already have is just the updated version.
Okay.
So we need to, it was provided in the email.
Is there a motion to adopt that policy.
Did you all get the policy? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I make a motion to adopt the write-off policy as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? For a vote of yes to adopt the policy as presented, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is passed. Is there a motion to accept the write-offs presented today?
Do we want to say each case, or do we want to just...
Let's be specific, because we've crossed some items out here. So you can just, the cases that have been presented, so item number 3, 5, 6, 7.
3, 5, and 6, and 7? Did we talk about 5?
3, 5, 6, and 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. 3, 5, 6, 7.
So for reporting, write-off requests, I make a motion for number 3, 5, 6, and 7 to be written off.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I just have a question. Why did we mark off the other ones?
That was me. Well, when we were doing this exercise, we've done this before, but some things have been updated, and where we were sending out these collection letters, which is required, and I believe that we sent collection letters to all of these people on this list, but I could not find the evidence to do so. So we will now send them a collection notice, go through that process, and then we'll send them back.
Just clean up the paperwork.
Yeah.
Documentation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it, doesn't happen. Mm-hmm.
Okay. For a vote of agreement to write off the balances in items 15, 3, 5, 6, and 7, state aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is passed. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the Ben Redaway request.
You're missing me.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did. Executive Director report.
Some good stuff to report.
Well, it said no items. So
I know, and then I changed my mind.
Okay.
Renewals have been sent out by paper, and there's a wonderful fillable renewal form on our website, as well as FAQs, instructions, a whole bunch of updated things. But the most important part is, thanks to mostly Julie and her ways, we were able to have a portal on our website that you can go and pay and submit your renewal online. Now it's functional. It's not as wonderful as going to be in the future, but it's working, and it's working well. We went through NIC USA. We went through Enterprise Security, DAS IT, and we had so many hands in every pot of people that work for the state and help us with this. Treasury was amazing. Some of the benefits of it, first, it's not a lot of paper in our office. Two, the credit card information is totally secure because it's not just on paper that we've used to, you know, put our credit card numbers and emailed it in or faxed it in. Sometimes you guys email them in. So now that's all, you know, very secure. So that's really nice too. We can track payments. Once they go through the process, they get an instant confirmation and an instant receipt, which is a lot of questions or requests that we get during renewal. Like, I need a receipt so my employer will reimburse me, or, you know, this and that. So super exciting, big change for an office that I worked for many, many years. Here we are, you know, this long later.
Straying away from paper finally.
Yeah. It's hard for me.
And it will work better than Zoom.
And I hope, yeah, yes, 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 it will.
Oh my God.
Jason? I just jinxed it, Jason.
He's kidding.
You know what, if there's any issues, everybody, you call Jason.
Yeah. Because he loves technological problems.
Yeah. It's really too bad you don't have video in that room, because Tanya's been dancing for like the solid 2 minutes. I'm so excited. I will be your first guinea pig.
Yay.
Get in line, sister. We've already had like 500. Yeah. Well, okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm just slow. I'm teaching classes, so you know.
Yeah, it's really cool. We'll add some stuff on the, you know, in other, maybe firms next, because that's coming up. I'm also happy to inform you that we've recruited 4 additional members for the BOAC, which brings us up to 9. So, Tanya, that should make you happy, too.
That makes me very excited.
Yes. What's that?
Hey, I was able to secure a full complement. BOAC has 11.
11. Oh, I must have had my numbers wrong. Sorry. Yes, 11. Yay.
I'm so excited.
That's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, we are getting to thin chickens. We've already talked about the budget hearing. With the budget's approval, they also approved our changed KPMs that we've talked about several times. So those are now effective, and we'll need to start measuring through those KPMs. We are still working directly with Inluin to sign the contract for our full licensing system. There are little weird state requirements that we have to go through, but we don't know what they all are, so we're learning as we go, but we're getting closer. I anticipate we'll probably start in the fall, because we have renewals right now, and that's kind of a bummer, but that's how it's looking. I was required, basically most of the state was required to review employees' position descriptions to reflect the current workload that they're doing. We've gone through those PDs, worked with the employees, worked with CHRO, worked with me. They are all over in class and comp now, and they will determine if there are any changes to classifications. So those are still pending. Hoping that they get through that quickly. It's been a long time, months. Sad news, but excited for Anthony. Anthony has accepted a position with the Secretary of State's Audit Division. His last day will be June 18th in the office. And go tell him it's not a good idea. So we will miss Anthony. It's been wonderful. Well,
congratulations, Anthony.
Yes.
It's,
you know, good for you. It's good to get, you know, additional experience and exposure out there. And now you're going to be on the other side of the coin. And don't ever let me catch you in front of the board again. there's good people there.
Yeah.
So.
I have started the recruitment through Workday. I got a little stuck, so I will be readdressing the recruitment here soon. I expect it to be open quite a long time. It's a hard position to fill, being a CPA and have kind of investigative skills and, you know, people working remotely and all of the stuff that goes along with hiring right now. So we'll see what happens.
Well, you have some new hires, don't you?
Hmm?
New faces?
Who?
Oh, I don't recognize that one.
It's Ashley. She's been here for
she?
4 years.
4 years? Have we been in the pandemic that long?
Stu is just so focused on what he does here. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't.
Yeah.
The work.
Yeah.
Just work. All the time.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I got, guys.
That's it. Okay. Thank you. Sorry for skipping you, Kim.
That's
all right. I saw that no item and then left off.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're to item 16, which is old business, and it's the Venn right away request again. So, Kimberly, why don't you give us an update on how the request has changed?
So, you'll remember that at first, Mr. Right Away wanted to just get rid of all of the fees and make them active. And so he started there, and we said, well, let's try again with something reasonable. He came back with, well, I'll pay like part of the cost, but none of the penalties, or whatever it was. It was another unreasonable ask. And this is either his third or his fourth time requesting. I had a conversation with him on the phone. I said, listen, He's like, well, what do you want me to request? And I'm like, well, something reasonable. Well, what does that mean? I'm like, well, you're going to have to give them at least some money back, you know.
And the original amount was $100?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. It's
the principal was $100,000.
Yeah. He's paid through...
through garnishments.
Through garnishments. Mm-hmm.
Not voluntary.
No. And, well, at first I think he was paying, and then he went to DOR. So anyway, he's paid over $28,000 in interest and $4,500 in costs, zero principal. And now he is, his offer now is $20,000 and the ability to reinstate his license from revoked to active. And he says he's working on a CPE to get to that space.
And remind us again, why did we revoke him?
He was revoked, yes.
Yeah. Okay, and why did we revoke him?
Providing services while lapsed and failure to return client documents.
But I think he also was, we can never get a hold of him.
Yeah, failure to communicate with his clients, too.
Yeah, it was like
not just a couple. It was like egregious.
Yeah.
And three cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
And so what was our core principal? So he's paid $28,000 so far. But what was the core, what was
the full penalty?
Yeah, the full penalty.
A filemaker says $100,200 plus $500 for costs, so $100,700.
And he still owes $100,000.
With interest and stuff, I'd have to do a little.
You said he's paid $28,000 in interest, and you said $4,500 in costs?
$500 in costs.
$4,500 in costs.
So he's barely paying interest off every single.
That's what you gave me.
So.
Doesn't do anything.
Oh, not voluntary. Collection costs, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry. So, he's paid no principal.
So, I mean, my opinion is that there's two matters. One is that he needs to pay the principal. Okay, so right now I know we've got it totaled as this is interest and this amount is cost. But when we get to that dollar amount of where the core, the penalty of the $100,200 plus the $500 has been paid, then I would entertain writing off the interest. You know, so we can flavor that whatever way. You know what I'm saying? But as far as, and when did we revoke him? What year?
Was
2014, May 2014.
Yeah. And so I think, when someone's been revoked, our response is that you have to go back through and take a CPA exam and go back through, retest and go back through. I don't know why we would make an exception here.
I would agree. I don't see, non-responsive. He's been non-responsive.
Mm-hmm.
Except for to tell us that he wants this thing to be run. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that he's actually working with us in any shape or form.
Did he say when he was getting his CPE what he intends to do?
No.
Yeah.
He's getting garnishments, but they're quite healthy amounts for, in January he had over $4,200, and then 2 weeks later $827. So that's over $5,000 in 1 month for garnishment. So he's
what is he doing?
Well, I don't know, but I wondered that too.
But I mean, you look at the formula for garnishments. They don't just take your whole paycheck. There's a formula,
yeah.
So that you don't leave a person, destitute.
Well,
what is he making?
It depends on what they're garnishing though, because the $4,200 could have come from them finding out he had another bank account that they didn't know about before.
Or a tax return.
Yeah, hitting that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If he's getting a $4,200 refund, he's doing something else.
Yeah. I mean, what is he?
True, yeah.
I don't know. It might be worth an inquiry to ask him what the heck he's doing right now for him. What's his income base right now? But, he needs to go back and take the CPA exam.
And then what about the $20,000? How do you want to deal with that?
Well, so is he saying that he can write a check today for $20,000?
I can reach it. Let's see what's
we obviously haven't hit discounts.
No. He's doing taxes on the side to make sure it's more.
Yeah. Being a manager of a collections process for a while. That's interesting. Yeah. What people will do.
You're being skeptical.
I respectfully request. I respectfully request that my penalties be reduced to $20,000. I believe this is a reasonable amount for my penalties and board costs given the facts of my situation, tempered by the extreme financial hardship that I have found myself under the last several years. I understand there is some latitude and discretion in making these complex decisions regarding very individual facts and circumstances. I respectfully request an amount of $20,000 to be considered reasonable. As a separate request, I ask that a path be of restoration of a CPA license be determined for me. I'm not really sure what that means.
He wants to get back in.
I know, but it was worded funny. Yeah. I will fulfill the CPA hours required to restore my revoked license. Thank you. I thank you for your time and consideration. Respectfully, Ben.
Mm-hmm. So when he says $20,000, he's going to come back and say, well, he paid $28,000. You owe me $8,000.
Yep, that's what I was thinking the same thing.
Well, what about the, okay, pay up the $100,000 and give you credit of $46,000 or whatever is already paid in interest.
Yeah.
And then drop the, in other words, drop the interest and apply it to the principal. If you pay the balance, yeah, we'll let you in.
Yeah, so once he's paid the penalty was $100,200. And then it was $500 in costs.
Yeah.
So once he's paid that, or, you know, so he's already paid $28,000 in interest. So let's put that towards the penalty. Okay, so that would leave $72,200 in the penalty and the $500. In, or, no, but he, you said he has paid $4,500?
No, costs. Those are
collection
costs, yeah.
Oh, those are collection costs.
Yeah, these are collection costs.
They have to, I would think they would stand.
Yeah, those would stand. He needs to pay that entire penalty amount of the $100,200 plus the $500, and then when he's paid that, then we'll go away, but he's got to resit for the exam.
So you're saying that basically the $100,700
minus
the $28,000 he's paid in interest?
Yeah, we would basically respond to you still owe $72,000 if you can pay that, and then go retake your CPA exam to get reinstated.
And by the way, where do you work?
Yeah. I think we need to know that this doesn't make sense. It's not adding up.
Is he under the impression that if he pays this off, it's a path to his CPA?
That's what he's asking for.
I mean, but is he thinking that's going to happen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, with this fourth letter, I think he's... Because initially,
so
the last letter was you waive all my fees and pay me back the money I gave you already.
Oh, yeah, we owe him, yes.
I remember Scott talking about this, like, why would he ever do that?
So I have to figure out, because he's through DOR, if we just keep, you know, if we'll have to do some fancy footwork with DOR to get that reduced and then start the questions of the way.
Leave it right where it's at. Once we get to that number and it's been paid, then we can do whatever magic with DOR.
So it was 2014 and we've just now collected only 28.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to take a few more years at best to get the additional funds. If he's constantly making it at the same place and we can continue the garnishments, or wherever he's working if they're garnishing that employer. But like Nancy said, that discussion about transferring that over would happen after we've seen that, he's fulfilled.
Okay.
So, and more than likely, DOR will have us write off that amount as a principal write off.
I don't care if it comes to us labeled interest, or if it comes to us labeled principal. I want it to come to us.
Yes, agreed.
As long as it's paid, it's okay.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got a little big credit card.
I would like to know what he's doing.
Does the state not have judgment debtor to capabilities?
He's got a whole bunch.
Okay, let's keep going fast. We've got some more things here to do. For Joe or Haley, did you guys have anything to add to that? Any difference of opinion there?
No, not for me.
I agree as well.
Great, thank you. Okay, Qualifications Committee, meeting from April 28th, 2021.
Julie, who's the liaison for that?
Jason.
Oh, yeah, that's right. the qualifications can be, again, it's really hard to comment on the professionalism. They are always professional. They always present the CPA certifications for qualification in detail. And more often than not, as one of the committee members is presenting the information, there are other committee members questioning, well, what about this and what about this? So I like how they interact with each other. I like how all questions are open for comment. And every single time I've been on there, the only two times I've been on there, people are there to speak about their qualifications and what they wrote in the qualification summaries. So yeah, it's a really good group, and it's really professionally well put together. So
great. Thank you. Okay, we have some ratification requests. Before we go down these, so I've been taking a little time already this morning to sign. Jed's already signed, but who is the third member who's going to sit and sign? Stu, thank you.
Yeah, you can split them up too if you get hand cramps.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. For the I was wondering about that on the third signature. So Stu, you've got time to do that.
Yeah, I do. Great.
Okay, item 18, ratification requests. Do I hear any motions?
I make a motion to pass all the CPA certificates as presented.
I'll second it.
For a vote of yes. Say aye.
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 And do we want to go through these each individually or just all together?
Separately as for the items listed. Okay. Motion is passed. Firm registrations?
I make a motion to ratify all the firm registration as presented.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor of ratifying the firm registrations, state aye.
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 I make a motion to
ratify. Those opposed? Motion is carried.
I'm so excited to do
the motion now.
I know. Okay.
Sorry, Nancy. I make a motion to ratify the industry certifications permits as presented.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor of ratifying the industry certificates and permits, state aye.
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 And those opposed? Motion is passed.
I make a motion to ratify all the municipal roster applications as presented.
I'll second it.
Further discussion? For a motion to ratify the municipal roster applications, state aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is passed. Item 19, peer review. It looks like there was no meeting held.
Correct.
Okay. So our next one, we're down to announcements and adjournments. Roll.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I can go back to the BOAC summary, there was a note that I had, and it's on here as well, that I overlooked, and I just want to point it out.
Okay.
One of the members suggested that the board discuss how to handle COVID-related issues, anticipating more complaints, and provide guidance to the BOAC. And just the fact that we're hearing a lot of, for lack of a better word, excuses for the offenses or violations of COVID-related. And so I believe that the community wants to get some guidance on how to approach these and then consider to open, close, move forward, really consider those issues. You know, somebody says, God died, you know what to do, but COVID, the pandemic and everything, and there's a lot of things going on, and what the government's doing, the federal government, and trying to help people, so, and a lot of those statements are being made.
It was a lot of that.
So let me ask a question for us on this. Is it sounding like, okay, people are just grasping at COVID as the excuse for everything, or do we have really legitimate, hey, COVID has prevented this. Like, for example, they've shut down the licensing. COVID prevented CPA candidates from studying. They literally didn't have a mechanism within which to take the exam. That is a true COVID example. But is that what you're hearing, or are you just hearing that, well, you know what, I couldn't exercise because of COVID?
That's true.
So, but what, you know, what is, I guess, and this is hard because it's not going to be a one size fits all.
Yeah.
It was wildfires that they had an excuse for. They had it for the changing of the tax seasons and how that was hard. Working remotely, that was hard. You know, like whatever we've all had to do, right? I mean, all of us have had a hardship in one way or another since 2020.
So following that, but what is it in relation to? Is it in relation to I couldn't return my client's documents, or I didn't file an extension because I have to work from home? Like, what is the nature of it? I mean, it's like, how reasonable is it that COVID would be a true and valid reason for not getting X or not meeting X?
He died. The preparer died because of COVID, so he's going to be excused. I mean, I can see that one.
Andrew, I'm
being ridiculous, but the point I'm trying to make is you can go all the way from there. I had a cold on Monday.
Yeah, see, and that's
caused by COVID.
Exactly.
It's case by case.
Yeah. It is going to be case by case, but I think what we really need to do is really look at each one of these and poke at it a little bit in the essence of, but how did COVID really keep you know, from doing it? You know what? I mean, I look at my job at work. I still have to meet every stinking deadline. Every stinking, you know, federal requirement and Oregon budget law and all of that, and nobody can sit there and say, hey, COVID didn't allow me to do it. Well, guess what? You do it. You get it done. So if you allow me to use that as an excuse, well, I'd be happy to do that. Okay, we always take the path of least resistance. So what kind of path are we going to set for folks? And I think it's a case by case. And I, you know, I wish we could, like, give a flowchart or give a, it's always going to, you know, here's the things that would always need a valid excuse, and here's the things that are not going to be a valid excuse. And student gave the one, right, that, okay, the guy dies, okay, well, got it. He didn't get it done because he's dead. He's not going to ever get it done. Yeah, that's an extreme, and we can see that one. But, well, I had a cold.
We're not going to do that for that. I mean, we have, like I said earlier, there's the amount of excuses we have for exam extensions and grade extension, or, you know, credit extensions. Cold isn't going to make it. COVID sometimes doesn't even make it because maybe they're just feeling like scared, so they quarantine themselves when there's no reason to quarantine. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. So I don't have examples. I didn't write down exactly what their reasons were.
And I can tell you if you want to.
Okay, that would be great.
So there was a couple of them where there were complaints from a client about failure to respond and not doing their job. I think that was like the argued thing that we saw. And I think the concern was, you know, are we going to give people some grace? That was the word I think that was used during the meeting, but for, you know, I don't know that we're not letting professional leave, so we don't know if it's a problem and what they did resulted in a negative. We don't know that yet. But I think there was just looking forward, like, you know, are we going to take that into consideration for those sorts of things where you, you know, just generally the not responding obviously is a violation. So I guess at what point, I think they were looking for some sort of guidance from you guys about how much we were concerned about, or how much we went for COVID concerns. And Tanya might be able to speak a little more to respond.
Yeah, I was going to say, primarily we were just looking for direction if, like, maybe their office was closed down and we weren't picking up the mail or something like that because somebody was out. Like, what... If there was any direction from the board on if we should be giving any leeway specifically around this time, it would be a very specific case-by-case basis. We weren't looking for a blanket, like, yeah. Just let everybody off the hook.
So, yeah, I appreciate that, Tonya. Thank you. I think that it would be the exception that we would accept COVID as an excuse. You know, we've all been working remotely for well over a year. We all know that we have to go get the mail. We all know that we have clients. I just don't see how you can use COVID as an excuse for not being, you know, timely and going in and picking up your mail. I mean, there may be a shutdown, but you still, you know, I'm still going to work twice a week when there's a shutdown.
But I think what you said earlier would be the guidance we would give for really dig into how did COVID affect this person's whatever issue they have. So if they're in Canada and they come across the border to pick up their mail in Seattle and they can no longer do that because of COVID, yeah, it's a valid excuse. So, but yeah, I felt like I was going to get sick if I went to the grocery store, so I quarantined myself for 8 months and couldn't do anything. That's not
that's
a valid excuse.
That's on you.
Yeah. So I think that would be our best guidance would be really that as a committee, you should dig into how, if they're using COVID as an excuse, did it really affect them, or is it just an excuse?
I don't think we can give any flat direction.
It's a hard one, and it's a really good question, though, because, you know, I mean, in working with staff, where I work, with working with my students, it's like, come on, you guys, life is going to go on here, and you can't keep using COVID as an excuse to, you know, break down and hide in your closet in your house. I mean, it's like there comes a point, if this is our new normal, deal with it. This is where we're at.
But I've had a situation where a friend of mine lost a father, and then after visiting the father in the hospital before they passed away, their children got sick, and one child passed away. Now, not doing anything for a month and a half in that situation is reasonable.
Mm-hmm. But is not doing something for a month and a half going to be something that puts them, you know, like,
exactly.
Like maybe if it was at like filing time, like you had a client, you know, in a week out, okay, that might be, you know, a moment where we looked at it and said, okay, you know what, you've just experienced life altering, maybe had a life event,
yes.
Right? A personal life event, you've lost a parent, you've lost a child. I can't imagine, you know, a whole lot worse than that. And the tax filing deadline was, you know, the next day, and you didn't get it filed. Yeah, I could see that being, you know, a valid excuse, but that's actually not, I mean, while COVID may have been the cause,
it's not.
It was the event, the passing of, you know, their family members. But I think that, you know, I just think it would be the real exception to using COVID as an excuse for not being able to function. You know, we all figured out a way to get toilet paper. We can all figure out a way to, you know, help our clients out. And it's been, you know, we've been home for, my God, too long, well over a year. And everybody has had to adjust. You know, auditors are auditing from home. They figured it out. They're doing it. They're making it work. You're doing tax prep from home. You know, it's like unless you're physically unable to work from home, you're working from home. You know, if you're a TriMet bus operator or Chariot's bus operator, you're going to work. You're riding in the vehicle. But other than that, you know, you're teaching classes from home, whether it's, you know, grade school or university level, you know, we've all had to adjust in ways that we haven't wanted to. And, you know, so I don't know, I just think it needs to be a real exception that we would go with COVID anymore as an excuse.
Yeah. I think they're just trying to find some, you know, mitigating factors that could lessen their violation perhaps, but...
Yeah.
Well, I think that would be presented with each case.
Right, exactly. There, everything that we do, unless there's some policy of a blanket extension or blanket anything, everything is case by case.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, I mean, you know, the BARC has a good question. You know, it's kind of like, okay, so how much longer are we going to, you know, entertain this? And is it, and to what extent? And I think as we go through this and we look at it on a case-by-case basis, I think it should fall out and be clear. I think, you know, when in doubt, we have to bring it to the table and talk about it collectively, because each person can see it just a little bit differently, and we're going to have to come to a conclusion on those cases. But I don't know.
You kept bringing it back to yourself in situations, and I think that's what the committee needs to do as they hear these excuses. What would I be doing in their situation? You know, my license lapsed because I had to stay in the house.
Yeah, I couldn't get CPE.
That's the thing.
Are you sure?
But it's all online, so.
Yeah, I know.
Everything is online.
Cheap CPE all over the place.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. I'm trying to make up something in my head that's like, what would be a valid COVID reason? And the one about, you know, you can't cross the border or whatever. Or, hey, the testing, you know, locations are shut down and they are not allowed by state ordinance, whatever. They can't offer it right now. Okay, that's a valid reason. But they're back open now.
This is Tanya again. I was just going to say, I think this answers our question and was a great discussion. I do think that we will see this for a little bit longer because sometimes these cases take a couple of years or, you know, to come to us. So, you know, some of them it, we haven't seen yet, so I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but we do take each case individual and look at them very hard. You know, and spend a lot of time on each one.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Tanya, is that what you said about it taking a couple of years to get to us. So you're right, we could continue to see some cases coming forward that folks are going to use COVID as the excuse. And I think we're getting tougher skin as time goes on here because we've all adjusted and we've all seen how, well, yes, it can work. And it's a new way of doing business. So,
yay.
Case by case. Yeah. Okay. Any other business?
Good, thank you.
Okay, any other announcements? Our next meeting?
September. I'm thinking it might be 1.5 to 2 days, probably 1.5. There's some things to think about.
Okay.
September what?
I think it's 16 and 17, yeah. Or 15 and 16.
16 and 17.
16 and 17.
So a Thursday and Friday?
Well, I'm going to make it. I'll have my COVID by then.
Sorry.
It's tax day, you can't be here, you know. You know what I'm about to say, though, right, Rob?
Deal with it.
Yep. My deepest sympathies to you, however. Okay, so hearing no further business, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting to an end, and I'm going to go out the hallway and start signing more forms.
Awesome.
So, Stu, I'll meet you out there.